Welcome to the Spin Access Podcast. I'm Eric Borzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
And I'm Nick Arthur.
This week, we are going to talk with Nick about MORAD. First off, what is MORAD? What is the literal definition? Like, what does the acronym stand for? Because I've heard two different versions.
I've heard Manjiki and O'Grady Research and Development. I've heard Mac O'Grady Research and Development. I've heard something like Mankind's Obsession with Something Research and Development.
Or Mankind's Objective Research and Development.
Yes, yeah, there you go.
All right.
Obsessive, objective. Either way, something. Works. For MORAD. Okay. Either way works for MORAD.
So what's a brief history of MORAD?
So Mac O'Grady, for those that don't know him, he was a tour player. His career was mostly in the early to late 80s. And he's got an interesting personal story, but he was basically a guy that was kind of searching for the answer like a lot of us do. And he was struggling in the 70s trying to learn how to play professional golf, even though he had been a good junior golfer. The bottom fell out at some time in his 20s, and he couldn't play golf very well anymore. And he had dreamed of being a professional golfer, so he went on the search, and he struggled for many, many years. And the origin story is that he stumbled on a little yellow book called The Golfing Machine, and not highly educated, so he went on a quest to talk to the guy that wrote that book. So he went up and visited with Homer Kelly and tried to learn about what that book was trying to tell him, because he didn't understand, like, his stories. He didn't even understand what a 90-degree angle was, didn't understand it. He just didn't have a good education, so he didn't really know what he was looking at. Actually, a lot of people that are really educated don't know what they're looking at when they look at that book.
You'll say that's a hard book to understand.
Yeah. But he went up there, and Homer Kelly was happy to kind of take him under his wing, and he suddenly did some things to his golf swing with the information he was getting from Homer Kelly that allowed him to start playing much better golf. I think he'd always been a searcher, but this just kind of fueled his desire to continue to search. And he took that information and then he did further research. There's always a question about how much research that Mac is doing. There you go. You got a couple of them. How much research Mac is doing with the help of actual scientists versus him just taking a video camera on the course and watching himself hit. What was unique about it was that because of his origin story, because of the fact that it was a rags to riches story and he ended up winning a couple of tour events, when he talked about the journey he had taken to become a better ball striker, he had credibility, right? Because people that had grown up with him had remembered that he wasn't a very good golfer when he was trying to make the tour. And then suddenly the guy was capable of not only winning a tour event, but striking the ball better than most of those guys he had grown up with. And so they obviously wanted to know what the answers were that he had found. And so he became probably more notable as a teacher to other tour players than necessarily a player himself. At some point, he lost his tour card. There were some health things that he was struggling with his back. But also, if you want to know the truth about him, he didn't know how to play golf. Like, he knew how to hit the ball pretty well, but he wasn't anyone that you would talk to that caddied for him or that spent a lot of time with him. He didn't have a real high golf IQ. He definitely thought about the swing in a fairly analytical way that I think helped him discover some things. But in terms of the art of playing golf, I mean, you guys all know this, that there's the ability to swing the golf club and put it on the ball. And then there's the ability to go out there and use your golf IQ to produce a score. And those are obviously two different things. So that's a little bit of kind of the basis of his story. And he's always been seen a little bit he has a little bit of the guru mystique. It's faded over time because it would be hard to find the guy at this point, but he's always had that bit of mystique. And it's really because a lot of tour players used to go to him and think he was a guru. And so it follows that a lot of amateurs would search out his tutelage as well.
And those tour players that went to him include Seve.
Sure.
And who else?
Oh my gosh. He probably taught from 86, 87 through the mid 90s. He probably worked with over 100 guys on the PGA Tour at one point or another.
Wow.
So there was a lot of guys going to him. Now, one thing I want to be clear about is most of the people that tell you stories about Mac, a lot of these guys have worked with him. I spent a very short period of time, a few hours one afternoon. So I'm speaking mostly from hearsay, but because when I was in college, he got my attention, I would always try to gather up any kind of information on what was happening with him and his teaching. So I followed what he was doing really closely, and I talked to a lot of people that worked with him. So a lot of this is secondhand and hearsay, but because I've spent a lot of time talking to people that actually spent a lot of time with him, you know, some of the stuff I'm saying is probably fairly useful to anyone that would have any questions about Mac. He's an interesting, he's a challenging,
he's a character.
Yeah, he's really a character. He's a challenging personality to get along with. The thing that people joke about the most is called what's being kicked out of the circle. He's happy to take a lot of people especially young guys that are trying to make the tour. guys that can actually athletically do kind of what he's trying to get them to do. He'll take Mr. Havenkamp and give him a lesson for a lot of money, but what he really likes doing is taking young, good players and trying to show them how to strike the ball better. The problem is that no one can maintain the relationship long enough to either decide whether it's working or not working. And so the joke is always, if someone's worked with Mac, the second question is, okay, well, when did you get kicked out of the circle? Because he gets rubbed the wrong way really easily. And even little small things that you and I wouldn't think two things about, he will consider betrayal of his confidence, and he literally will stop talking to you forever. Like, there's maybe one or two guys that have kind of weaseled their way back into the circle. But for the most part, once you are kicked out of the circle, that's it. And that means for the rest of your life. So it's just it's kind of a weird social scenario that he's got going in his, and when he starts to teach people and makes them apprentices. And I'm sure it's a little bit of a shell shock to people too. And I consider myself to have been a Mac fan growing up. I actually consider it a blessing now that I never got to spend a lot of time with him, because at the time when I was younger, I would have been kicked out of the circle for some perceived insult or some perceived portrayal. And I'm just glad that I didn't have to go through that at the time.
Yep.
Now, at my age now, I couldn't care less. Like, if someone was acting like a jackass, I'd say, okay, this guy's clearly a jackass, and move on with my life. But if I had been 22 and I thought this guy was the second coming, then I would have been crushed to find out he wouldn't pick up the phone the next day for something I did or didn't do. So,
right. You would have felt like you actually did something wrong, when in reality, it's just the personality of the relationship, right?
I'm sure that's what a lot of guys did early on, is that he would quit talking to him and it wouldn't help him anymore. I'm sure they thought, well, what was it that I could have said to somebody, or what was it that I did that was a perceived insult? But then after you talk to the 97th person that's had that experience, you start to realize what the common denominator is in the relationship. So, yeah.
If you go CF for too long, you build up too much momentum, and then you get flown out of the circle.
You got CF mastered, and then you realize you can't hit a high draw with a 4-iron, and then you got one more question, you won't pick up the phone anymore. So,
right. If you want to get the most out of your practice at home, or have friends over to play some of the world's best courses without leaving your house, you need to stop by Carl's Place, the leader in indoor golf simulators. Carl's new 3D sim builder lets you specify the size of the room, then helps you build a fantastic sim that fits your needs, space, and budget. SpinAxis listeners can use the coupon code SpinAxis, only going to say that in the podcast, not going to be on the website, so SpinAxis, to save 5% now through the end of the year. Visit Carl's Place at carloveet.com. It's East Troy, but carloveet.com.
So in your short time with him, Nick, what was your big takeaway from that time?
The thing that I did to try, when I found out, so I'm down here in San Diego, and I found out, this was 1994 probably, and I found out, because I was a golf instructor, club pro, assistant pro, I found out that he was going to be showing up at a local course, because you guys know this, in the city, you know all the other local golf pros, so one of those guys that was at a course that he was going to show up at and work with a tour player, they knew I was a fan. And so they called over and said, hey, your boy Mac's coming over here. I go, oh, really? When's he coming over? He's like, he's coming over tomorrow with BJ Singh, and they're just going to go off to the back of the course somewhere and take a bunch of balls and hit some balls. So you may want to wander out there if you're interested. And I said, yeah. So what I did was I just went out there, grabbed a cart, and acted like I was playing golf with another golf pro that I worked with. And we just rolled up on him like, hey, we're playing golf. And then we just wanted to see what they were doing, even though it was all pre-planned. And so I thought, okay, is this guy going to just tell me to, is he going to shoo me away, or is he going to let me sit there? And he'd probably let us sit there. We were probably there for 3 or 4 hours, and I was just peppering him with questions. And he was very nice to me. He was anxious to help, and BJ was great. It was a blast watching those guys hit balls and talking about the golf swing. So I didn't necessarily learn anything new from him, because I'd already knew a bunch about what he was teaching, but just to see him in the flesh and spend some time with him was a blast. It was great.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool.
So what would you say, you know, in today's world, with all of the technology that we have to be able to measure things, is there anything, you know, with your understanding of the system, sort of has the technology today has disproven some of those thoughts and ideas that he was really big on?
Yeah, I mean, he got most of the stuff wrong in some way. The first question you got to ask, and this is what happened to me, is what is it, especially if you kind of transport yourself back in time, like most guys know enough stuff that they wouldn't be kind of lured into a romantic relationship with these ideas. But in the late 80s, right, when if you had a 2D video camera over your shoulder, you had all the gear, man. So
yeah,
based on that level of technology and that level of understanding, when you watched him hit, so what had happened to me real briefly was that I took a lesson when I was 15 years old, something like that, had the basic junior golfer swing, kind of throwing my hips out from under me and jumping up on my toes and rolling the forearms and hitting a sling hook down the right side and to about 235. And I took a lesson from a guy named Kip Peterbaugh, who some of you guys may know of. Yep. And he's a teacher out here in Southern California. And this was 86, maybe something like that. And he showed me some video of Mac, and I didn't know who Mac was. I mean, I heard the name. I knew the guy was a tour player, but he goes, yeah, this guy's on tour. He's a great ball striker. And this is just a good swing for you to look at. So I'll give you some footage to take with you and take a look. And it just, he was basically trying to clean up my motions, trying to get me to turn my hips a little bit more and not slide quite as much and not twist the arms quite as much and get the ball started a little straighter and not hit a big sling hook, that kind of stuff. So kind of the thing you should learn when you're 15, 16, 17 years old, right? So I worked on that some, but then I happened to see him playing in the 87 La Costa Tournament Champions because he had won the Canon Sammy Jr., Sammy Davis Jr., something the year before in 86. So 87, I saw him out there on the golf course, and it suddenly occurred to me, oh, that's the guy I'm supposed to watch. And I can see him in person. He's playing with Bob Murphy, which is that's quite a contrast.
Yeah.
You know, Bob Murphy's, you know, God bless him. He's hitting it 235, slice into the right rough, and it's raining, and it's 5 inches of rough, and he's slashing out. And Mac's hitting it 280 in the air with a baby fade every time. And of course, he wins that week, right? And I'm watching him. I followed him around 14, 15 holes and shoot 65. He makes it look like it's nothing. So it's like, that's a seminal moment for me, right? That's a watershed moment. Like, oh, this is the guy that's doing the stuff you're supposed to do. Now, having looked back at that, understanding, okay, that had an emotional impact on me. So it made me really want to follow what he was doing. But the truth is, if you want to know the reason Mac was popular among other tour pros, but generally anyone, any club pro or any aspiring tour pro that want to work with him, it's that he had aesthetically had a swing that looked very clean, right? It looked like it didn't have a lot of moving parts. It looked pretty simple. And he hit the ball 300 yards. If he'd only hit the ball 250, no one would have cared, I promise. It's the fact that he would talk about, it was easy to think or to be lured by the idea that he had come up with a secret, because you're looking at a guy that's 6 feet tall, 180 pounds, athletic. I think he was like his high school, he was a quarterback in high, like the guy's an athlete, has good hand-eye coordination, real strong dude, and just pounds the pee out of it and doesn't curve the ball much. And you're like, okay, when he's telling you what he's doing in his swing, you're forgetting some of these God-given attributes he has.
Sure.
And he's got a swing that looks aesthetically pleasing, and he's talking about effortless power. You see that, and it looks like the guy's got the secret formula, right? And I'm sure other tour pros look at him the same way, that he's doing something that's making this really, really hard game a lot easier. And he's doing he had a really nice swing. He had a very nice golf swing. But it wasn't so much that he found the answer as much as you're just looking at a guy that's super athletic that's going to do anything that he has to move something fast and precise, he's going to do it pretty well. And you put a golf club in his hands, and he's got some pretty good ideas on the swing, and it all kind of comes together. And so it gets your attention. And I think that's a big part of the allure and how the mythology gets started with a guy like that.
So one of the things that I've always, because I've watched a bunch of the YouTube videos that I've, you know, recently, you know, made its way to the internet. I think I've used the word a few times, like the mystique behind Mac, right? And there's definitely, he has that aura. Why now are more and more of those tapes sort of being released? Is it because the people who are in the circle have been out of the circle for so long and they're like, well, there's no repercussion at this point?
And it's because Mac is old and it's becoming irrelevant if you get kicked out because he's not doing much anymore.
No one cares anymore, honestly. Yeah. A lot of these guys have probably had all this footage kind of sitting on their hard drive for a long time. And people will still ask questions about Mac. They don't ask about him as much anymore because he's pretty much disappeared from the scene. I think he's gone to Japan. Maybe he comes back occasionally, but he doesn't give schools very often, I don't think. And so every now and then, someone that's a swing geek that kind of looks into the history of golf instruction, you're going to stumble onto him because he played a big role, especially, you know, what guys are doing in the 80s, 90s, he played a big role on that. A lot of the way he thought about the golf swing. I mean, he named the P system. That's essentially coming from Morad. And that's a way that a lot of us, even people out there that don't know much about Morad, use that system to categorize or reference positions in the swing.
Yeah.
So he had an impact. So anyone has questions about it, you know, people aren't afraid to kind of show the footage of their experience because they're not worried about Mac calling them or they don't care about kick out of circle. But very few people would have done it in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, only a few people that would really get pissed off maybe would do it. But it was a lot of it was kept a secret for a long time, just for fear of making Mac mad and having him not talk to you again.
Just confirm or deny two things.
Sure.
Number one, oftentimes at schools, he would have everyone working on the same exact thing, whether it was what they needed the most or not.
Of course. Yeah. Yes.
Right. And he would kind of experiment on the people that he had in the schools just to see what happened. Yeah.
For sure. Not only that, would he have people working on the same thing as he tried to adjust what his new model was? And his model was fluid, man. It was, you can, and this is a lot of the footage I got from you, right? Because I lost some of my footage and I was talking to you and Mike. It's like, you guys have any? You go, yeah, we got tons. We'll get to you. So we've seen
a couple hundred hours.
Yeah, we've seen all those schools, and he's teaching a variation from week to week that changes, and it's not, it's almost like you watch two different videos, and one of the things he's teaching, he's absolutely forbidding in the other school. Like, you do not do this. And then like 2 weeks later, it's like, well, no, this is what Homer Kelly said. I thought, they said Homer Kelly had a lot of flaws, and the flaws you fixed. And it's like, he goes back to Homer Kelly and circles around, and he is a moving target. And if you want to ask what Morad teaches, you really got to first ask the question, well, what year are you talking about? Because what year are you talking about? Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about, like, there was a kind of a Morad Model 1 that was kind of a late 80s model, and everyone's familiar with the white shorts video. That was kind of the way he laid out that first program. But it was in constant flux afterwards. And so you could probably say there were certain eras, like there was a late 80s model, kind of Model 1, and then it changed a little bit in the early 90s, 93, 94. By 97, 98, it started to look a little different again. By early 2000s, he was doing a couple different things. By 2008, 2010, it looked like he was circling back around a little bit to Model 1. And then by 2013, it looked totally weird again. There was all kinds of stuff he was trying to do. And he would treat himself as a guinea pig, and he would essentially treat all his students as a guinea pig too. But one of the things that's really tough watching some of those videos is that now that I have more experience as an instructor, as much as you can take some athletic kids and kind of shoehorn them into this type of model with some caveats, when you watch him take some of those 15 handicap guys and trying to contort them into some of the things that he's capable of doing, it's like, oh, you're going to destroy this guy for a couple of years. Like, this guy, you're going to run this guy out of the game if you try to get him to do some of this stuff. So it's not really about making people. Yeah, go ahead.
I think my favorite video is one where a guy is, it's clearly at the end of a long day, and the guy's like swing back to like P2, and he it's an hour long video, I think, and the guy barely gets to P3. He has to like name 47 different things at each position, and they have to all be right, or Mac yells at him, and he has to start over. So he goes to the setup, and then he finally gets to P2, and he messes up the 14th thing or something like that, and then he's like, ah!
Yeah. Yeah, it's... As a golf instructor that would be interested in trying to help people enjoy what's a really hard game, help people not embarrass themselves, it's pretty painful to watch these guys that paid a lot of money take one of those clinics, because you know you can just kind of see what they're working on. It's like, this guy is going to be crippled after this thing and be so confused, no idea what he's doing. Now, there are some it's hard because I got to separate myself from what I actually think is closer to what we understand to be how you would go about taking even a young player that was really athletic, what you would do with a player like that to actually make them a good ball striker. And now, even with that type of player, although they'd be capable of doing what Mac wants them to do, even now it's tough because I know that I wouldn't even want them to do that. But when you watch it with someone that's not even athletically capable of getting themselves into those contortions, it's even more painful. So one of the things that's, this is a fallacy that any system that anyone got high on in the late 80s during the 2D video era is that when you start looking at static swing positions, as long as you understand the context of those positions, then it can be useful. But if you don't, like the classic mistake would be you're trying to do Morad 1992 and you put it at P6 and you pose there and you go, this is where it's supposed to be. This is where shaft's supposed to be. Right wrist bent back at P6. In order to pose there, you're holding your right wrist back, but in motion in the swing, you're throwing that thing away really fast. You're going the opposite direction with it. So the things you're doing with your body to get in those positions and thinking that, well, I just need to speed it up, and then that becomes a golf swing. It's like, no, as you speed it up, it becomes fundamentally different. The kinetics all change completely. And so that's the rabbit hole you can go down with a system that's designed around what appears aesthetically pleasing, with your reference points being static and then trying to find those static positions in motion. If you don't understand how the kinetics changes in motion, you're going to go down some bad rabbit holes. You're just going to hit the ball poorly, because I've just seen so many guys that try to do Morad, but they don't hit the ball like Mac, because what Mac was saying he was trying to do with his positions in the 80s, he wasn't doing. Like, if you slow down a swing, it's like, oh, your shaft's not on the heel line at P8. And then later he goes, well, no, that's CF. I was like, yeah, if you want to hit a hard, low, full cut, you can get the shaft plane on your heel at P8. But you can't hit like a 4-iron in the air doing that. It's like, it all starts falling apart because you understand the way the club is supposed to be delivered and the kinetics it takes to deliver the club into those functional impact alignments. It's just all the stuff that he said looking at 2D video made sense at the time, but it should not make any sense to anyone now that knows anything about what they're looking at. So
yeah, I mean, so you're trying to teach positions in a motion. Right. So that's a couple of bad things. What would be like one or two things that were great that might still be relevant now?
Well, I think the idea that, you know, to me, it's not even what Mac is telling people to do as much as when he was the fact that he would, I guess the way I would put it was his favorite thing to do. And one time I was almost arguing with a guy that had taken a lesson from a Morad teacher and said, well, yeah, I know you don't even know what that Morad. You didn't work with Mac. You don't work with the Morad teacher, and I'm working with the Morad teacher. I know. And he goes, it's an infinite system. You can hit all different kinds of shots. You just plug and play the variables. And I go, he goes, Mac is not trying to teach people like a model swing. I said, are you kidding? Have you looked at any footage? Every footage is him standing next to a player, and he's playing the video back, and he's drawing lines and comparing in 2D video. He's got the ball like 3 inches from the guy's heel, and he's hitting balls next to him. For the purpose of comparing that guy to a model, so it's a little, it almost to a point of absurdity. But the idea that you would use visual feedback so that you could understand the right golf swing looks like, so you could use it as a feedback mechanism, I think that was important to start to understand. Like that was a necessary transition period we had to go through to start to learn about how to teach someone a golf swing. We just find out that's kind of a difficult way to do it based on what we know now. But I think it's kind of like any physicist that learns things from previous physicists that were wrong about certain things about physics, but they needed that foundation of knowledge to ask the right question to actually take the knowledge further. And to me, at this day and age, I think it's not that you can look back at Morad and go, I think Morad is still super valid. Not what he's necessarily saying how the golf swing should work as much as the way he started showing people how to study the golf swing is probably really useful and helped later us ask the right questions to refine our knowledge. I know it sounded a little bit abstract, but that's
a great summary to me. That sounds like a great summary. Like it, as for listeners or anybody out there to sort of summarize this and wrap this episode up, you could almost, if you want to go and dive into some of those old videos, there's a lot of good entertainment to watch. And like you said, maybe it makes you ask, you know, some of the right questions. So,
yeah, I think there's value in looking at some of that footage to kind of understand what his approach was, how he went about it, and kind of the feedback mechanism, which at the time 2D video was, when I was a kid, the idea of being able to, like when I was like 22 or 23 years old, just saving up money from working in the pro shop, you know, showing up and folding sweaters in the pro shop just so I could make the $2,000 my first paycheck to buy a video camera. Because once I had a video camera, I thought, oh, this is it, man. It's over. I've got this thing figured out. Now, that's not true, but it was really important for me to use a video camera to develop my knowledge. Even though it wasn't going to give me the exact right answer, it was kind of the precursor to what we would do later, which is 3D motion analysis and force plates and understanding, kind of having a deeper understanding of what's really happening in an athletic motion. And the important thing to realize about golf is that the thing you learn from Mac that's not true is that, and that you get this from some other branches that came about because of Morad, is that they try to treat golf as unique from other sports, and it's just not unique. And it, I think it, people think it's unique because the ball sits still, but if you compare it to throwing a baseball or throwing darts, you're still throwing the club at the ball. So you're fundamentally not going to do things different from the way other sports are played. And sometimes going down the Morad rabbit hole or some of the other branches from Morad, it makes you think that you can turn your swing into a robot that's apart from other sports. And it's really not like that. The human body doesn't work like that. And you can't turn yourself into a machine, honestly. You're a biomechanical machine, but you have to understand how the human body actually operates if you want to swing a golf club well, just like you have to understand the same types of things if you want to play other sports well. They're much more closely related than I think something like Morad would make you believe, because you can't turn yourself into a golfing robot, essentially.
Unfortunately. We'll save some more for another episode if other people are interested. Nick, do you want to tell us anything about where you are or pitch anything or promote anything?
Not necessarily pitch anything, but I'm in the industry, kind of like you guys are. I work for a manufacturer, and I do a lot of putter fittings and club fittings and stuff like that. And I have a background in teaching as well, and I always try to help people get better, just like you guys. So I'm still trying to do that every day. And
thanks.
Yeah, it's a blast. Awesome.
That was great, Nick. Thanks for your time, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure.
Jason, where can people find us?
You can find us anytime online at thespinaxis.com. And if you have any questions, please let us know on social medias. If you like this episode or want us to cover another one, let us know.
All right. Take care.